Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've been talking about what to expect when you go to vote tomorrow, both at your polling site and on the back of the ballot in New York City. But now we'll take a closer look at the actual design of the state of New York's new paper ballot, which caused confusion for some voters in September's primaries. Joining us now for a design critique and to relay tips to you before you pick up that paper ballot tomorrow if you're voting in New York State is Jessica Friedman Hewitt, former managing director of AIGA's Design for Democracy. The AIGA is a professional association for designers, and she used to direct their Design for Democracy program. Hi, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Nice to be here.
And for those people who did not vote in the September primaries but do plan to vote tomorrow, what basics should they know before they fill out that new paper ballot to ensure that their vote is counted? One of the first tips I see that you give is to think inside the box.
That's right, Brian. You know, the President Dent was on earlier talking about the instructions say the oval is above or next to the candidate. In fact, the oval is below the candidate. I think we can sort of forget about all of that and just remind people to vote by selecting the oval that exists within the same box as the candidate name. So don't worry too much about where the oval is. Just select the oval that is within that box where you see the name.
Because the lines are there. There are boxes.
There are boxes. The lines are there.
And the boxes contain the name and the oval to fill in.
That's exactly right. They do that.
And can you confirm, though, after looking at these ballots, that our previous guest from the Board of Elections last hour, who said the oval is always below the candidate's name, so that's another way that you can look for it and not make a mistake, that is accurate?
That appears to be accurate. That appears to be accurate. But, you know, of course, the why we just kind of want to make that general box recommendation is because if people actually read the instructions on the back of the ballot, we believe that they all will say fill in the oval above or next to the name of the candidate. So we just want to eliminate that confusion and tell people to vote inside the box.
Right. And the Brennan Center at NYU found that incorrect wording is actually mandated by state law. The law dictates the exact instructions to be used, which do say fill in the oval above or next to the name. But now we know from you and from our Board of Elections guests that the corresponding ovals are actually in the box underneath the candidate's name. And I gather that they're going to be handing out palm cards with instructions tomorrow that maybe contradict what's in state law. They'll all get arrested at the voting locations, but they'll at least help you vote for the candidate of your actual choice.
We hope so.
If you follow the instructions on the sample ballot, which is next to or above, and you want to vote for Carl Paladino for governor, you actually end up filling in the oval that indicates the Green Party candidate, Howie Hawkins.
That's right. I'm glad you brought that up. For voters who did vote in the primary, they might have been relieved to find a ballot that was a lot better than the mock ballot that the city had shown. Now, that ballot used a column-based layout where candidate names were sort of stacked on top of one another in columns. Unfortunately, in the general election, based on the sample that we now have, this sort of grid layout is going to be employed. And this grid layout is significantly more confusing than that column-based layout that we saw in the primaries. So, and this grid layout, not only is sort of the inherent nature of a grid confusing, but the way this one is employed where it's essentially the conventions of the grid are essentially broken in that some columns have all one party and then other columns, just as you were discussing, alternate maybe between the Green Party and the Taxpayers Party. So it's not as if you can sort of learn, okay, you know, this is the style of the grid. I know that each column represents a party. Each row represents the options. Rows are also broken. if you're reading across, there might be some blank spaces there separating candidates, blocks of candidates from one another. So the grid is really going to be a challenge. And we have some tips on how people can navigate their way through that as well.
And another thing I think that people need to know, especially if they're interested in supporting some of the third parties, like the Working Families Party on the left, the Conservative Party on the right, to maintain their power. Going across the list of gubernatorial candidates on this sample ballot, we see Andrew Cuomo is in box A, that's the Democratic line, and in box E, which is Working Families Party line. Palladino is on row B or box B, which is for the Republicans, and then also on the Conservative Party and something called the Taxpayers Party. And there's a consequence if somebody wants to vote for if somebody votes on more than one party line. Because unlike the old clunker lever machines, there's nothing that actually physically stops you from filling in, let's say, both the Democratic Party Cuomo box and the Working Families Party Cuomo box.
That's right. And that would invalidate your vote. And you could actually vote for Cuomo 3 times, Palladino 4 times, if you also used the write-in column, which is on the far right.
But wait, I think it's worse than that.
Yeah.
Because if you make a mistake in some other ways, the machine will spit back your ballot and tell you that you have overvoted, which is language for voting for more than one candidate in a race, or undervoted, you didn't vote in a particular race and it wants to make sure that you did that on purpose. But my understanding is that if you vote for the same candidate but on multiple party lines, it will accept that vote, but it will automatically count it as Democrat or Republican, the two major parties.
I see. I did not understand. My understanding was it would reject the ballot, but
so
that's good to know.
It could be that you're right, which it would actually be a better outcome.
Right.
But everybody should know, just in case, if you want to vote for either of those candidates on their minor party lines, make sure to fill in only the minor party line oval. So there's a tip.
That's right. Yep.
Let's take a phone call. Marie in Brooklyn.
Hello.
Who voted on primary day, has some tips. Hi.
Hi. I have 3 tips. One, if your eyesight is not as keen as that of a bald eagle, you must bring your own magnifying glass. The magnifying sheet is plastic, and it is worthless. It's like having Vaseline smeared over your eyeballs.
Oh, is it really? Now, because I had said before, having seen the sample one, that I thought it was convenient to use and pretty good. My vision isn't bad enough that I need it, so I was just looking at it, you know, out of curiosity.
No.
But it lays right over the sheet, unlike a physical magnifying glass that you know, have to carry and hold up. But you're telling me it doesn't magnify enough.
It isn't that it doesn't magnify enough. It's that it distorts. You get a smeared image. So that's one thing.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is, if your eyesight leaves something to be desired, it may be a good idea to bring a flashlight. I did not need the flashlight that I brought to the primary, but I do think it's a good idea because you don't know what the lighting conditions will be like where you're going to vote. And the third thing is, in terms of privacy, in the primary, I didn't want my votes to be seen by the election worker who was standing right at the scanner, so I asked if I could turn it upside down, face down, and was told yes. Now, if you turn it face down, people will still be able to see how you voted on the questions, but they won't be able to see how you vote on the candidates. So bring a magnifying glass and a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
And turn the ballot face down when you feed it into the scanner.
Marie, thank you very much. And we're running out of time, so anything else that you want to mention with respect to the ballot design?
Yeah, I think the last caller just sort of addressed this, as did your previous guest. There are questions on the backside of the ballot. People should make sure to turn the ballot over, and they should also make sure to scan for all their options and to know how many they should vote for in a given contest. There's very tiny text that does say, you know, all of a sudden you're voting for one, all of a sudden you should be voting for 3. Voters should make sure they know how many to vote for, and then they should go ahead and scan across and make sure that they see all the options. They could exist over multiple rows.
All right. Well, we've spent a lot of time on this today over multiple segments of the show. So hopefully all of you, at least who listen to this show, will be armed for voting so your vote actually gets counted tomorrow if you're voting in New York State with these new paper ballots and new voting machines. Jessica Friedman Hewitt, former managing director of the AIGA's Design for Democracy Project. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian. Good luck voting, everyone.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we'll play highlights and take calls from anyone who attended the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert rally. Did it restore your sanity and or fear? You can call us right now if you were there, 212-433-WNYC. If you were there, 212-433-9692. What'd you think?